Hey folks, welcome to the Coach Rob podcast. Today we've got an interesting episode, something that we all deal with, and that's stress. I'm David Pingree. I'm going to be bouncing some questions off the coach here. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, man. It's good to have you back.
So stress is something, I don't care who you are, you're dealing with this. It's just one of those things in life we have to learn to manage.
Yep.
But when we talk about specifically with health, wellness, and performance, whether you're an athlete or just trying to get through life without ending up on the top of a tall building with a high-powered rifle, you know, we need to manage it. How do you explain, you like to use the analogy of a teeter-totter.
Yeah.
Explain the teeter-totter of stress to me.
I want the listeners to grab a piece of paper and draw a teeter-totter. Just draw a straight line, put a little diamond in the middle of it, and that way you've got a little generic teeter-totter. On that left-hand side, draw a big square, and then break that square into four quadrants. I always like to have you break it down into personal, professional, financial, and athletic. Because no matter what we do, think about your day yesterday. Anything that you did per minute is going to be in one of those four quadrants. Mm-hmm. You're with your family, you're working, you're trying to pay bills, or you're trying to stay healthy. When we look at the idea of those four quadrants of life, the only way that you can offset that is through adequate amounts of food and sleep. So what I always want you to do is have the box of stress on the left, four quadrants. The box on the right only has two, food and sleep. Once we get some level of homeostasis, now we can go ahead and move on with life. Think about it when you first were, you know, with yourself being a professional athlete. If you look back at it now, how hard was your life compared to what you're dealing with now?
Oh my gosh, I'd kill to go back to those days.
Absolutely.
It was the most simple time of my life.
Well, and
except when I was a kid, maybe.
What is it that Mitch Payton says? You know, when, for those of you that don't follow motocross, David and I come from a motocross, motorcycle racing background. What's Mitch always say? Mitch is the owner of one of the teams. When you're getting paid to race, you'll never be wealthier in your life ever, because everybody works for you.
Yeah.
You have no costs. All you do is have an opportunity to make more and more money.
Yeah, absolutely true. You get into life and I don't think you realize, at least I didn't, mm-hmm. how complex, how stressful it's going to be.
That's right.
So it's important. I think this, you can be an athlete or not at all. This is super important, learning how to manage that and balance it.
Well, for our listeners that may not consider themselves a high-end athlete that makes a living at it, they still have the same amount of stress. Mm-hmm. You still have especially if you're trying to improve your health and now you add a dynamic of athletics. How long are you going to work out for, at what intensity, et cetera, et cetera. But when you look at those other three, no matter how you partition them off, we never can take on more than 100% of stress. Mm-hmm. And what I want the listeners to think about is, if all of a sudden I get some bad information and my wife is sick, well, that quadrant of personal, that's going to grow a little bit. It might take a little bit of my attention from working out. I get hit with a big tax liability. That quadrant's going to take a little bit of my attention to how am I going to pay it. If all of a sudden I find out, you can go on and on and on. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we tend to lose sight of, and again, even if you don't consider yourself an elite athlete, if I took all of the facets of stress that our average listener listens to or has to endure, and you were to put that on your neighbor, could they handle what you're dealing with? You know, you and I come from a motocross racing background. If you look at somebody who has, if you took all of the stress that you deal with on an athletic basis and you were to just have one person do nothing but the athletic, and then you look at somebody who by noon, I'll tell you what, let's go a different example. Let's take somebody that owns their own business. So by noontime on Monday, they've been in three meetings, they've looked at a couple P&L statements, they may have already gone to the gym and worked out for 30 minutes to an hour, and that becomes their new norm. And that's what I want the listeners to keep in mind. We might have a stay-at-home mom, mother of three. Look at what she puts up with, what she handles and manages before noontime. She's getting...
Oh, yeah, she's a saint, by the way. That's absolutely harder than anything any of us do.
It's probably the best example, right? Because she's got three... Let's say she's got little ones at home. She's got one that's at school age, so she's got to get that one dressed and fed and ready and to school. Then she's got her partner that she's trying to get out the door, fed, dressed, ready. Then you've got the little one, very unpredictable, maybe running a fever, something's going on. You've got the AC guy that's coming over to do the Freon, and she's balancing all of this. If we take just the stress of raising a child, take the stress of just being in a relationship, take the stress of just exercising. My point is we become desensitized to stress. And what ends up happening is until our system starts to give us some feedback, like the stress has literally become too much, we just keep adding more and more to it. We're wide open. Best example I can give is any of our listeners, depending on your age, go back 5 years, go back 10 years, go back 25 years. It hasn't gotten any easier. And you would go, oh my gosh, I would give anything to go back to being in high school, go back to being in college, being newly married, being a professional athlete. When you thought your biggest issues were pretty monumental, and then you realize they're pretty inconsequential in the big scheme of things. And we just keep adding on.
Yeah, I don't know if anybody else is like me, but I feel like I'm a broken record, and I just keep saying, oh, if I can get to here, then things will kind of mellow out for me. Well, if I do, when we get to there, then the pace will balance
That's
out.
Right.
It just keeps going faster.
That's right. Well, and if anyone's listening to this show, then we know they have the same personalities that we have. And that is, we're never satisfied. If it's in the athletic realm, if two is good, four's got to be twice as good for us. If we can achieve that financial milestone, we just want more. Yeah. And it's not that we're not satisfied, but we're hyper-competitive. We're hyper-competitive with ourselves, with our training buddies, our business partners. We always are like, what can we do? We want to offer the best amount of information. Well, information never ends. I want to offer more resources. Resources never end. And we get so passionate about, you know, we talk about it off the air together. I love the fact that people, they send us nice messages. Hey, that really, that changed my perspective. That was an epiphany. That's awesome. That's addicting. You want more of that because you want to give back more. You and I talked about it. When we were growing up, we didn't have as many resources about nutrition and physiology the way we do now. Obviously, we talk about it on the show often. I think we have to kind of break up some of the misinformation that's floating around, unfortunately. But of course, we're going to want to do more. If two shows are good, four would be better, wouldn't it? And I think all of our listeners fall into that same personality type.
And so we talked about the four quadrants of life: personal, professional, financial, athletic. Your stress is what you're going to be, or your offsets to stress: food and sleep.
Yes, sir.
What is the QQ of food and sleep? What do you talk about?
We refer to that as quality and quantity. If you watched our podcast or had listened to our podcast when we talked about rest and recovery, we talked about Q&Q, and relevant to sleep, it's not only just how many hours of sleep you get, but what's the quality of that sleep, particularly deep sleep. And we work on a ratio of deep sleep to awake time. Like we teased, I don't want you to be laying in bed for 9 hours, but you really only get 5 minutes of real quality sleep. That's the difference between the quality of the sleep and the quantity of the sleep.
Right.
When you look at food, quality and quantity, especially for the listeners that are athletic, they really underestimate how many calories they're burning on a daily basis. When you take the average individual, take their body weight, and you add a zero, that's how many calories they're going to burn just to sustain life. And I think people underestimate, they go on a bike ride, they go on a 30-minute walk, or they go do some sport-specific activity. All of a sudden, they're surprised to see that they burnt 600 calories, 700 calories, 800, which doesn't sound like that big of a deal. I want the listener to contemplate, or if you train with heart rate monitor, to go and look and really quantify what your caloric burn rate is, and then divide that by 75. Because if you look at an extra large egg is 75 calories, someone's burning 3,000 calories, divide that by 75, that's a lot of eggs. I don't know about you, but I can eat three at breakfast and don't need to eat all day long. I feel full. I always find nutrition is an interesting concept because we know that we need sleep and food to work together. If I satisfy appetite through food, I know I'm going to sleep better. Food with sleep helps me offset this game of stress. But then when you start to quantify it, what I have never, in 37 years, never once have I had somebody that comes to me that eats enough. I don't care if it's a quote-unquote general fitness or whether it's an elite athlete, because we don't understand the caloric burn rate. And a lot of us think when we think of caloric burn rate, we think, well, I've got to be sweating. I got to be in the gym. I got to be... No. When you're in a high-power meeting and you're just working your brain, you've been in environments trying to work with your children, with your daughters at soccer or whatever, and you know you're just go, go, go. How tired are you at the end of the day? You didn't go work out for 12 hours.
Yeah, any stress. Kind of stress. We talk about this all the time at the fire station. I'll go work at a slow station. Mm-hmm. We run maybe three or four calls all day.
Okay.
But and their medical calls, nothing major, and I'll still get off duty and I'm tired.
Absolutely.
Because there's always that stress of, man, the alarm could go off at any second. Maybe mm-hmm. it's a big fire. Maybe it's a pediatric drowning. Like sure that enough. Stress is always there.
Yep.
And, you know, to your point, it's burning that fuel up there. Even though you're not doing anything physically active.
Right.
Even that kind of stress will burn calories.
And in the context of what we're saying today, can you imagine if I could take a blood sample every hour? Because when you're looking at stress, one of the negative, probably the worst part about stress is the negative effect on the body's health. Constant stress, people that are in bad relationships, people that are in bad jobs, people that are financially strapped, people that are unhealthy. I use those same four quadrants. We've all been there. Mm-hmm. When one or all of those are not going well, if you were to take a blood sample, a hormonal byproduct of stress is cortisol. The best example I could give the listeners is if you almost get in a car wreck and you get that flush feeling that comes over you, that is cortisol dropping into the bloodstream. It's part of your fight or flight. It's not healthy. Mm-hmm. Now you go, yeah, of course not. I almost got in a car wreck. Financial situation, relationship issue, morbidly obese, bankrupt. You're going through a car wreck. Over and over and over again. You wake up in the morning, still in a bad relationship. Wake up in the morning, still in debt. Wake up in the morning, still obese. Cortisol. Yeah. And what ends up happening is the body, I want anybody that enjoys motors in any shape, form, or size, get in your vehicle, only put it to the floor. What's that going to do to your fuel economy? What's that going to do to the wear and tear of the motor? What's that going to do to your tires? What's that going to do to everything in that system? We would never drive our cars as fast as they would go everywhere and go, yeah, I don't know why it's wore out.
Yeah.
But we get up in the morning with the same stresses constantly. And this is where the body, and for the listeners, you may have heard fight or flight. It's part of your parasympathetic system. But when the body is in a mode of constant fighting, and this is why we start to see substance abuse. Because if I can't fight it, what do I want to do?
Numb it.
I want to numb it. I want to fly away from it. I'm not justifying it. We've all had our trials and tribulations. I'm just saying we have to work in the reality of the human body can only handle so much, and then it wants to get away from it. Mm-hmm. Good or bad, whether it's with good behavior or bad, we want away from it. Why is that? But we'll justify a bad relationship, a bad job, financial distress, obesity on something else. We'll justify it. At the end of the day, we pay the price as human beings. We've talked about this on almost every one of our shows. When you recognize that the cell is the foundation of health, and when that cell is healthy, you have healthy tissues, organs, and systems. Well, now you got a healthy system until that cell becomes tainted. It's deficient of a micronutrient. It's unhealthy. More than one. It's very unhealthy. Now you add stress. Now you have high levels of cortisol dropping into the blood, which is part of your fight or flight. Your rev limiter is just going up and up and up until it just can't rev anymore. And then what happens? You're diagnosed with Epstein-Barr, chronic fatigue, Addison's disease, all fatigue-related diseases associated with excessive stress. Now, some people go, no, it's not too much stress. He trained too much. Excessive working out is stress.
Yeah.
Oh, he worked himself to death. Still stress. Yeah. This is where I want to go back to the four quadrants, because if I'm making, all I'm worried about is making money. Well, I probably don't have a good relationship with my family. I probably don't care about my health. Oh, the bank account, that quadrant's killing it. Maybe two of them. Business is killing it. Cash is going well, but the other half of my life,
a mess.
We're a mess.
The other thing about cortisol, which we were taught about in medic school early on, is it completely shuts down your brain's ability to function.
That's right.
If you've ever been in class and they get called on, and you don't know the answer, and you stand there, and that flush feeling, and you literally couldn't spell your name.
That's right.
That's cortisol.
That's right.
It comes in and just shuts your brain off. You know, yeah. It's an awful chemical. So why does it increase body fat? Let's talk a little bit about that.
This is
or how.
Yeah, this is something that I hope every listener will take notes on, because most people think, well, if I want to lose weight, I'm going to cut calories and I'm going to exercise like a madman or a mad woman. What's the worst thing you can do? Cut calories and add more stress.
Those two things, yeah.
If you understand the fight or flight and you understand the production of cortisol, and then you go out and you smash yourself in the gym and you starve yourself, all you do is just add more stress. And this is where the body, it can't keep up anymore. And
let me just, sorry to interrupt you, but I want to quick just interject. The fight or flight response is your sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous systems designed if you are in danger, your life's in danger. This is like lizard brain stuff.
Yep.
Your body, it's dumping these hormones so that you can either run and get away and live, or you can fight it off and live, yep. Right? It's your body's...
No pun intended, fight or flight.
Fight or flight. No, I mean, pun literally, intended. You're either going to fight this and live, or you're going to run away and live, yep. But it's trying to keep you alive.
That's exactly right.
Okay. So I just wanted to kind of clarify that.
Well, and then what ends up happening is we finally get our, and when I say we, as a human species, we go, okay, you know what? I'm going to dedicate myself to better relationships, better finances, better health. But then we go overboard with it. When we look at stress, think about a funnel. And we've used this illustration in other shows together. If you think about the funnel, what needs to come out of the bottom is two hormones. Human growth hormone, which is the only hormone that allows us to adapt. So if you work out in the gym, if HGH is plenty, you're going to get physically stronger. The other hormone that we're looking for is testosterone. That's where we increase the red blood cell count amongst with other benefits of testosterone. But I want the listener to think about the funnel as the adrenal system. We've already said the adrenal system is what lets you deal with stress. So for the system to do its job, we know what the job is, excrete hormones, recovery hormones. What goes in the top of it? So if the body doesn't get high quality MCTs, medium chain triglycerides, good oil, good fats, like extra virgin olive oil, raw nuts, coconut, chia seeds, all of those, think about it. You're asking a system to produce something without the necessary ingredients to produce something. And when you look at stress that way, that's why we always, if you go back to the original illustration, the category of stress can only be offset with food and sleep. Well, now we're talking about the quality of sleep. There will be no quality of sleep unless you satisfy appetite before you go to bed. Now the funnel can do its job because it has what it needs. Hunger has been satisfied, so the body goes, we can go to sleep now. That hierarchy of needs is checked off. Now the body gets high quality oil, comes in the top, it does its functions, it excretes the hormones. What happens? You wake up fresh and leaner. People go, wait, I got leaner because I went to sleep? So anytime your body releases HGH, hypothetically speaking.
You and I have had a conversation about if you can get a little nap in during the day.
Absolutely.
That's big because again, even if it's 30, 45 minutes, you're producing...
It's like a fuel injector. Yeah. You're just getting that little dose. There's scientific evidence that HGH is in testosterone, that hormonal release is usually about 15 to 20 minutes into your sleep. That's why a power nap works. But think about it. When you were racing as a professional athlete, if I could get you to nap even twice a week, you get 9 days of HGH and testosterone in 7 days. Nap 7 days, you get 14 in seven. So when you're looking at human performance improvement, it's not just the work you do, it's your ability to recover. Well, it isn't just the ability to sleep for 8 hours, it's to give the body what it needs to do. It's see how this all cascades together?
Yep. Yep.
I want to protect sleep. Well, you better satisfy appetite. I satisfy appetite, now I want the internals to do their job. For example, think about when you tear down muscle. You need amino acids, which come from protein sources. You need aminos to rebuild muscle. But you're asking the body to rebuild itself without giving it the aminos and go, why am I not putting on lean muscle mass? Why am I not dropping body fat? Because you're not sleeping at a deep enough level, REM 3, to produce and excrete HGH, which naturally makes you leaner. And that's the epiphany I want the listeners to have.
So the stress is affecting your sleep. It's affecting diet. It's affecting all of those parts of your life that are leading to not enough of those things coming at the bottom of the funnel.
But compound it. Everyone's fat phobic, so they don't eat the good fats because all fats are bad. And now the body doesn't get what it needs to excrete hormones. It hasn't satisfied appetite because everybody's being told to go calorically restricted. Now the body doesn't want to go to sleep because it would rather be fed. And you're asking it to produce something without giving it on either side of the conversation.
And that's why the food and sleep also produce that fat, right? It's food's in. No sleep, so you can't produce the HGH.
So you get fatter. And that's where people don't understand cutting calories and overtraining, high intensity interval training. In a textbook environment, absolutely it works. But I've never had a client that presented themselves that's getting adequate amount of sleep, eating adequate amounts of quality and quantity of food to say, yes, let's go ahead and do that HIIT training. Mm. Do I like it? Do I get it? Yes. Do I see where it could be beneficial? Yes. But not in the real world.
So you would prefer just more moderate paced training and fitness?
A mixture. It can't be just all of one or just of the other, because one, we would all get bored to tears. But
right. And I use this as an example, because for years, I think it was about 6 or 7 years, I CrossFit a lot and I loved it.
Sure.
It was my wife and I's kind of hobby together. You and I are both very competitive. So to me, it was like a race or
absolutely
a meet every time.
Yep.
And I was just loving it until hips and shoulders and things started getting tight and screwed up. But I did notice what you're talking about. I kind of just ran myself into the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, not knowing all this information at the time, what you say now just really resonates.
Well, and when you go from, remember we talked about every show, we want to talk about general fitness all the way to elite level performance. If somebody's just wanting to drop weight and they're being told that they're not doing enough, and I'm always blown away by that. I mean, I've had athletes, clients that when they get home from work, when they leave the office, I say, put on a pair of walking shoes. When you get home, do not go in the house, because now the responsibilities begin.
Mm.
Walk down the street for 5 minutes and come back. They go, well, that's only a 10-minute walk. Well, over the course of Monday through Friday, that's 50 minutes. It's more than you did last week. Five out, five back, do it 5 days in a week.
Yeah.
It's a little bit. Because now you start to build muscle durability, because believe it or not, walking takes a lot of muscles. A lot of people don't realize that. Now you're building the strength in the muscles, the tendons and the ligaments, and guess what? The body's like, you didn't crucify me. That wasn't so bad.
Yeah.
How about we walk a little longer? Mm-hmm. Well, isn't that a novel idea? When someone goes, I'm looking forward to exercise. See the paradigm shift?
Right.
Give it enough calories, satisfy appetite. Now I go to bed and I wake up tomorrow, I'm like, I feel really good. I feel like I did something. I feel a little tenderness. I slept really well. Now I've got that mental resiliency. I'm excited because now I've got some success. Now we start turning that domino the other direction. Now people are excited.
Sure.
That's what we want to do.
All right, let me throw a scenario at you.
Okay.
We good? Oh, sorry, I thought you nodded at me. Okay, let me throw a scenario at you. Let's say we're on The Biggest Loser. And
okay.
You're coach. What would you have your clients doing?
Well, what I find so interesting about The Biggest Loser, and you guys can research this, I don't think there's one person in history that's won that show that kept the weight off. And I find that sad.
Is that right?
Yeah. And to me, it just shows you how wrong the show really is. If you study how much medical attention that they have behind the scenes, because they take these morbidly obese people and they're putting them on a treadmill to where they almost, you know, vomit. And you got Julian and the other guys screaming and making fun of them. And I get it. It's made for TV. What I'm going to explain is not made for TV. So that's why I'm not on it. And that is, I would literally, first of all, let somebody sleep in without an alarm. We do not realize when we wake up to an alarm, and bless your heart, thank you for being a public servant, that you know how it is when that alarm goes off. Even if you're just sitting there relaxing, reading a book, and the alarm goes off, it's a startle.
Oh, yeah.
And if you took somebody's blood serum level, I guarantee you the cortisol level just went up.
Oh, yeah.
First thing I would do is have them sleep 8 hours uninterrupted and wake up without an alarm. So now if you look at circadian rhythms and the production of cortisol, cortisol naturally wakes you up. So now we're golden. We've got that circadian rhythm. We're waking up when your body's ready, and at the end of the day when it's tired, we'll let it go to sleep. First thing I would do is get up and I would have them eat a little bit of protein. I would not do a fasted diet walk. And I want people to think about that, because most right now, intermittent fasting is a big conversation. Intermittent fasting is, again, great in a textbook setting, but if we're trying to reduce stress and now I just let the body go 8-9 hours, now I'm going to go exercise it for another 3 or 4. I just added more stress. Oh yeah, I can get the body to start cannibalizing other things for fuel, but it doesn't take away from stress. First thing I would do is feed them a little bit of protein, get some water in them because they're a little bit dehydrated from sleeping, and we'd start walking. Depending on each person and their background, they may be only able to walk 10 minutes. That's fine. You're walking 10 minutes. You might be able to walk 30, 40. Because I want the listeners to think about, your joints may not be ready for an hour walk.
Yeah.
So don't just say, oh, I'm going to go walk an hour because I'm dedicated. Start, let your body tell you what it'll let it do. You go for that walk. As soon as you come back, sit them down to a meal. because when you exercise, you get this enzyme floating around in the bloodstream called a glycogen synthase enzyme. Big fancy way of saying your body's ready to replenish what you just depleted, so you'll absorb it more efficiently. Then what do? Go get them a massage. Get the stress out of their system. Now, again, this is Biggest Loser. They don't have to do anything except eat, sleep, train, and repeat, right?
Right.
So you go and you get them a massage, you reduce the stress.
So far, you're creating the most boring television show I've ever
Amen.
Heard.
Amen.
Exactly. Sleep in a bunch. We're going to walk.
That's
it. Eat, then I'm going to get you a massage.
That's right. We'll sit and watch you get a massage while I dream about it. Then, once they wake up, let's say they get up from the massage, you have them eat a little bit, because our goal is to have them just graze a little bit throughout the day, nothing big. Midday, we get in the pool. We start walking in the water. Because what that's going to do is the hydrostatic pressure of the water reduces the heart rate. So anytime I submit the body to a human body to the density of water, the blood leaves the heart through the arteries. But if you like turn your arm over and you look at the blue veins, unoxygenated blood comes back to the heart through the veins. Well, if I have hydrostatic pressure, my heart doesn't have to beat as fast to bring unoxygenated blood back from my feet. Plus, I'm moving the density of water, I'm getting stronger. Core temperature is going to be lower because of the water. If they're competent, we'll swim. So we'll spend an hour in the water. You might walk for 20 minutes, swim for 20 minutes, aqua jog for 20 minutes, but you're going to be in the water for an hour. I don't care if you're walking in the deep end in circles. Put on some old sneakers so your bottom of your feet don't get tore up because your feet are going to get soggy. Just be in the water for an hour. Come out, sit down to another snack. After that snack, lay down for 2 hours. Wake up, eat a little bit, either hit the water or go for another walk. Have a nice dinner, go to bed. When your body's tired, simply fall asleep. Now you have an interrupted circadian rhythm. I want the listeners to think about, no disrespect to you as a firefighter, but look at most first responders, look at physicians, look at ER doctors and nurses. Look at the obesity level.
Yeah, it's high.
What is that from? Because when that door opens up, you have no idea what's walking in it. That's just one cortisol shot after another after another. They're awake when they should be asleep. They're asleep when they should be awake. They might go 20, 22 hours, no sleep. Cortisol's going all over the place. Circadian rhythm's going on. Stress, 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 stress. Next thing you know, we're huge. And that's how we would win the Biggest Loser, because as a percentage of loss, the lower the heart rate is, the more body fat you use. The higher the heart rate, the more stored sugar you use. So this nonsense of having these people go to they about puke on a rower, treadmill, and all this, you know, doing the ropes and all. I thought you came here to lose body fat. No, I can put you in a parking lot and dehydrate you, say that you lost weight. There's a difference between losing body fat and dehydrating somebody.
Right.
There's also a difference between doing something that's sustainable, my way, or doing it the non-sustainable way, which is the high-intensity interval training, starvation, calorie deprivation, screaming, hollering, calling you names so that I could get to the core of your problem.
Yeah, that's super interesting. And I think something that when folks are looking at a diet plan or an exercise plan, what they want to do, and I'm guilty of this,
sure.
Have been multiple times, but you need to find something that is long-term sustainable.
Yeah.
Because if you're on, you know, and I don't mean to offend anybody that's on keto, that doesn't seem like something you're going to keep up for the rest of your life.
Right.
Right. And the results are there. I've got friends who are on it, off and on, and you see their weight just wildly fluctuate.
Yeah.
It works. They lose weight when they're on it. But boy, the minute they fall off the wagon, they don't just fall off it. I mean, they light it on fire and, you know.
Yeah. But let's explain why that happens. If somebody goes from eating, let's just start with 2,000 calories. If somebody's eating 2,000 calories and they lower that to 1,500, this is where you can't outfox physiology. Your metabolism will slow down to 1,500 calories. It's a self-protecting mechanism. So the body's like, okay, we're hungry. You're not going to feed us. And it's clear 2 days, 3 days, 3 weeks, the metabolism slows down. Now, we all know if you put your body into the state of ketosis, the body will start to leverage stored body fat for fuel. I get it. It's textbook. Yes, it works. What happens is you get tired of eating that way, because you've even said it, your friends finally go off of it for a multitude of reasons. Why? Well, now let's just say we go back to 2,000 calories. Well, if the metabolism is slowed down to 1500 and it now thinks it's in a starvation mode, take yourself away from the comforts of your house and plop yourself down on an abandoned island. The body's in self-preservation mode. Now all of a sudden it gets those 500 calories back. You get 9 calories of energy from a gram of stored fat. So everything you bring in, I'm in preservation mode. I'm going to convert it to stored fat because I think you're trying to kill me. Mm. This is why it's called a yo-yo diet, and this is why the weight loss industry is a multi-billion dollar industry. It's designed to fail. If I can get you to go down, you're going to get fed up on it. So you go from, let's say, 160 pounds, you lose to 150 pounds, you go to what? 170. Next thing you know, you're at 170 pounds. You go, oh, see, I got to starve myself. You go back down to 160. You go, I can't eat like this. You go up to 180. You do this indefinitely for your whole life. And that's why it's designed to fail, is if you mess with the basal metabolic rate, the body's going to constantly, we call it the tail following the head of the snake. And if I can get you to not go after calorie by cutting calories, because I get into some online debates that are pretty nasty sometimes. I'm not a believer of calorie cutting to lose body fat. I'm more interested in reducing stress first. And then if we do need to drop some body fat, what you do is you do more low intensity training, because I leverage more stored body fat and I cut down on the amount of high intensity training, which only depletes stored sugar. Mm-hmm. The Tour de France has done it for years. You watch these guys, October, November, December, they'll go on a 6-hour bike ride at 15 miles an hour. Why? To leverage stored body fat for fuel. These are the same guys that in the Tour 7 months later are going 35 miles an hour. Mm-hmm. You're going to build your power and your anaerobic threshold and lactate tolerance. All those energy systems will be built. What's the first thing they focus on? Dropping weight. Do they drop weight by just starving themselves? No. They go out and they do low intensity exercise to leverage stored body fat. Last thing you want to do is add more stress to the system. That's why the majority of our listeners, we rush into getting married, we get rushed into having children, and as soon as those two things happen, food and sleep gets beat up. Mm-hmm. And then the stress just starts piling on, and we just get progressively heavier every year. And we try everything under the sun, cut calories, Weight Watchers, Zone, Atkins, and all this other stuff. You mentioned it earlier. In our offices, we refer to it as the KISS model. Keep it simple and sustainable. You mentioned keto, and I'll bring it up in the context of this. If I told you some of the horror stories of people that have come in that were on keto, clumps of hair falling out, 20-year-old guys that can't get an erection, not being able to sleep. I mean, it's not that I'm anti-keto. I just have to look at somebody presents themselves to us saying that this is what they did, and I'm looking at the health fallout. It's pretty hard for me to say, yeah, I advocate that. That makes a lot of sense.
Right.
And it's not that I'm anti anything. I'm just more about when you think that you can kind of dupe the principles of physiology and nutrition. If you look at history, I've been doing this since 87. Let's just talk exercise for a second. If I look at exercise, I go from right now, let's call it CrossFit. It'd be CrossFit. Before CrossFit was P90X and Insanity. Before that was Superset. Before that was Super Slow. Go all the way back to 87. And then if you look at nutrition, right now everything's keto. And then before that it was Zone. And before that it was Atkins. And before that it was South Beach. And before, we're all back to the principles of nutrition. Mm. I get it. People are trying to find ways to dupe people into buying a box, a bag, some system.
Magic bullet. So a quick follow-up question on the cardio that you talking about, low intensity cardio.
Yeah.
Does it necessarily have to be longer?
It's not that it has to be longer, but think about what you're trying to do. You're telling me that you want to burn body fat. So the longer you do it, the more success you're going to have with it. Sure. If you only want to lose 1 pound in a week, that'd be very realistic. If you're somebody that wants to lose 3 or 4 for whatever reason, the more time you give it, the faster it's going to work for you. And then you bring up a good point, because this is why people have a tendency to gravitate towards, well, if I can't do the duration, then I'll cut the calories. I get it in theory.
Or I'll go harder for 30 minutes and that'll be the same as walking for an hour.
You hit the nail on the head, because you're essentially doing it the wrong way both ways. If you take the intensity up, you're only burning more stored sugar. Mm. Then people go, then why did I lose more weight? Dehydration. So mm-hmm. just if you're going to look at the scale, that's a different story. We only use the scale to evaluate hydration and inflammation. So if you step on the scale in the morning and you're up 2 or 3 pounds, that's more of an inflammatory response to exercise or nutrition. Because if you had a real easy day and you still were up, you probably are having a negative reaction to something that you ate. Right. That's why keeping a food log is helpful. On the flip side of that, at night, you should always be 3 to 5 pounds heavier than your morning number. That's how I know you're properly hydrated. Now, for some of the listeners, they go, holy cow, I need to be heavier every night? Yes, that's how you know you're hydrated. How you can test it two ways is, and you notice the next morning you're down 3 to 4 pounds. You didn't work out in your sleep, but you lost all that water weight through respiration and bodily functions. Well, that sounds great for someone who wants to scale to say a certain number. Well, if you keep losing 2 to 3 pounds every night, by Friday you're just dehydrated.
You're a piece of beef jerky.
Exactly. You're a beef. That's a great one. So now by Friday you're not any. You're lighter, but you're dehydrated, but you're not leaner. We only use tape measurements every 6 weeks to look at the building of lean muscle and the dropping of unwanted body fat. The scale is only for inflammation and swelling in the morning and hydration at night. Now, there's going to be some people that say, nope, that's not true. That scale is telling me percentage of body fat. All right, let's talk about it. There's roughly 3,500 calories to a pound of fat. So if that scale is up 2 pounds, did you seriously eat a surplus of 7,000 calories yesterday?
You'd have to eat a lot.
A lot.
Yeah.
Because if we're back to that subject of fruits and vegetables, the good news about fruits and vegetables is they're nutritionally high quality and dense, but they're calorically anemic. Hmm. So if an extra large egg is only 75 eggs and you're burning 3,000 calories, that's a lot of eggs. Mm-hmm. If you're looking at a bag, you know that salad, Salad Express, the bag, it's only 75 calories in that entire bag of salad. So if you're needing 3,000 calories and you're committed to food, you're going to eat yourself right out of, you know, you're running out of time.
And wear your teeth out.
Literally.
Going through salad.
But when you want to come back to me and say, no, that scale, I'm fat. I'm 2 pounds heavier. I gained weight. All right, I'll meet you in the middle. Show me what you ate yesterday. Show me this extra 7,000 calories that you converted to body fat since yesterday morning. Mm-hmm. No one's ever been able to do it. Mm-hmm. Truth of the matter is your body can't convert that fast.
Right.
But if you're hell bent that that's all body fat, then you got to use the numbers both forwards and backwards. Because if you ate 7,000 calories, I'd like to see you'd be so bloated and you'd be so miserable, you probably wouldn't even been able to get on the scale.
I think I could do it with Krispy Kreme donuts.
But it's funny you say that, because I've had somebody that have said, well, what if I eat McDonald's? And I don't know the exact amount. I haven't looked at it in a while. How many calories are in a Big Mac? Let's say 300. Let's be optimistic. Let's say 500. 7,000 divided by 500? You would have eaten that many Big Macs in 24 hours to put on that 2 pounds of fat that you're saying.
It's a lot of Big Macs.
If you want to play the numbers game, I'll play the numbers game. But you can't only use them one direction.
Right.
So I want that to be a big relief for people, because the scale is not your enemy. It really isn't.
No, and I think people place too much value in that.
It does, because they don't know how to interpret the information that's coming on it, which comes back to, if the scale's not going the right way, I'm going to cut calories. And then when they cut calories, they go, see, I lost weight. No, you just became dehydrated. Mm. Because when your body, let's just take an apple. When you eat a carbohydrate, it gets stored in your body. A carbohydrate gets converted to stored sugar. Stored sugar is called glycogen. When your body converts from an edible carbohydrate to stored glycogen, for every 1 gram of water, for every 1 gram of sugar that goes into the body, 2.8 grams of water is part of that conversion rate. So if I take calories away, I just dehydrate you. This is why when you look at a lot of the like Zone, Atkins, South Beach, when someone buys that book, all they want to know is what they're allowed to eat. Mm-hmm. What they won't tell you is, if I don't let you eat fruits and vegetables, you will definitely be 10 pounds lighter by the end of the week. Mm. But they don't tell you why.
Man, yeah, that's
what's frustrating.
Yeah, that's frustrating.
That's what's frustrating.
Well, I hope this helped you guys. And, you know, like I said, stress is something we're all going to deal with. We need to just figure out effective ways to deal with it. And particularly when it comes to health, wellness, fitness, this is a great, great tool. Hopefully you guys got something out of it. Stick with us. We've got a lot more podcasts coming. So thanks a lot, Coach.
Thanks for your time, bro.
And we'll be back again. See you soon.
Care.